You're listening to Outside the Cage with your hosts, Gabriel Owens and Alan Yod.
But anyways, welcome to Outside the Cage. I'm your host, Gabriel Owens. My co-host is Alan Young. We're here to talk about the last couple weeks of MMA here at the end of the year. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yes, I agree. Merry Christmas.
Wow.
Sorry, I guess I should say something at some point during this.
I would think so, yes. You are the co-host. But when I cease talking, that's usually a sign for you to jump in and say something.
All right, I'll remember that next time.
That's good to know. So what do we have we haven't talked about?
We have a UFC card and a WEC card, the very last WEC card.
Yes, so those are the last two shows that were on.
Yes.
Intriguing last two fights, our last two cards for the year. UFC, we had one of their bigger events, title match between GSP and Koscheck. Headed the UFC 125?
124.
And we had the very last WEC card last week, which...
The last one ever.
Really, left the WEC go out with a bang.
It was a good card. I mean, WEC rarely puts on a bad card, and this was no exception. One of the most exciting title fights I've seen in a long time.
It was very close. We'll definitely get to that because we definitely have a lot to talk about the final lightweight championship of all time for WC. But we'll start off with the 124 card, GSP versus Koscheck 2. We had opening the show was a made weight Thiago Alves facing John Howard. Thought Thiago looked pretty good here. He did not get tired. He made weight fairly easily. He's crediting the Dolce diet, which is what Rampage and a few other fighters have done, be able to make weight on time. Thiago looked good.
He did. And John Howard, not so much. I mean, he didn't look bad, but he basically was outclassed for three rounds.
He just couldn't stay away. He didn't get knocked out. He got knocked down twice in the fight. But he was outclassed. Couldn't take him down. Couldn't stand with him. Thiago, can continue, fighting like this at 170 and make weight regularly. You know, he might become a force to be reckoned with once again.
Right.
Next fight we had, maybe the, could have been, maybe still contender for a knockout of the year.
It was quite a knockout, quite a surprise. Joe Stevenson versus Mac Danzig. Danzig left hooked Joe Daddy in the first round, and he went down hard. And
all backpedaling.
Yeah. But Stevenson was, should have been, at least. I didn't actually check anyone's predictions, but in my mind, at least, Stevenson was a heavy favorite because Danzig's
spotty,
right? And Stevenson has been pretty consistently in the top of the division.
But, I think he's never been knocked out. I think he's been knocked out before. I don't think I've ever seen him knocked out like this.
I don't know the answer to that. It wasn't a question, but I still don't know the answer to it.
No, he got choked out by BJ, and he lost decisions to Ken Flo and Diego.
Mm-hmm.
Three highest profile fights, but he wasn't knocked out in any of them.
Right.
But he was still beat up in the BJ fight. You know, the choke was kind of elementary at that point. But yeah, a little surprising. Danzig did come out to Misfits music, which made me happy. A lot of people will get that joke, but I was actually thinking, like, man, this guy should come out to some kind of dancing music. And then I heard the Misfits, so I chuckled. I may have lulled.
Very good.
Our next fight was Jim Miller versus Charles Oliveira.
Oliveira?
Oliveira. That sounds better.
Oliveira? Something like that.
Any looking Brazilian dude. Was
lightweight.
He's lightweight. Jim Miller's been working his way up in the division. I believe he asked for a title shot after this. He's not going to get it, but at least he said something other than whoever they give me, I'll fight them. Blah blah blah. It's like, really? You get 10 seconds to promote yourself in another fight, and you're just gonna say that. Come on now. These people.
It's gonna be. I think the lightweight title has a couple of fights lined up for it already, so it'll be at least late summer or fall next year before he would even have an opportunity. Were he given one?
He'll have to win another fight against the top guy first.
Yeah, yeah.
If he wins the next fight, it's against the top guy. I could see him being in line for a shot, but right now there are two more title fights lined up. So, that's probably not going to happen.
And just because we didn't actually say Jim Miller won by knee bar in round one. Although,
that's true. Yes, he has a pretty sweet little knee bar, too, on a high-level jiu-jitsu black belt. So.
Yes, and Oliveira was going for sub-attempts, but Miller got it first.
I think it was a situation of Oliveira, you know, not thinking, like, no way this guy's getting this on me, and then, oh, shit, my knee's about to crack. I better crack.
Yeah.
It happens. You can't get too cocky, even when you're a high-level black belt. So you never know who's going to be the guy that really clamps one on you.
Right.
It's fun fight. It's fun fight. I mean, the whole card was good. So, I mean, I really didn't have a problem with any of the fights. Next one was the Vanilla Giraffe Stefan Struve versus the Mouth of the, wherever he's from, Sean McCorkle.
And there was actually one more fight in between there. Matt Riddle versus Sean Pearson.
Oh, that was an undercard fight. I'm not looking at the undercards fights.
Uh-huh.
Let's see. Yeah, that was they got fight of the night, the unofficial fight of the night, I guess. Since fan voting decided the fight of the night, and according to Dana, the fans fucked it up. So he gave unofficial fight of the night bonuses to these two. It was fun, I guess, but I don't think it was that much of a fight of the night. Riddle just punched at air a lot.
But right.
I guess it was entertaining. It was three rounds. He wouldn't go down.
Yeah. I actually gave the first round in that fight to Pearson, which the judges disagreed for. He had a knockdown, basically controlled the fight and did some work on the ground, too. So I thought Pearson won the first round, but who am I?
Pearson won the fight pretty handily. I said it was fun. It was definitely guys going at it. You know, you can't deny that, but...
Yeah. Whoops. I'm misreading my notes here. Hey, what I meant to say is I gave rounds 2 and 3 to Matt Riddle.
Ow. He didn't hit... Like I said, he hit air. I mean, he threw more punches, but he hit a lot of air.
Right. And yeah, I did note...
Punches landed, Pearson definitely... Punches landed and damage done. I can't see how you couldn't give Pearson the rounds, but...
Yeah, well, it was... I thought rounds 2 and 3 were at least very close, but...
I didn't see it that way.
Okay. Neither did the judges. So...
Judges were right.
So screw you all. Then we had Stefan Struve versus Sean McCorkle.
Battle of the Giants, the largest fight in UFC history, even slightly bigger than Dan McGee versus Tim Sylvia from 1944, I think, something around that area. Just slightly. 6'7", McCorkle, 6'11", Stefan Struve. A lot of shit-talking going on before this fight, mostly from McCorkle. He's trying to be the heavyweight version of Chael Sonnen, I guess. Even though there's already a Pat Barry. If Pat Barry and Sean McCorkle could fight, that would be an interesting trash talk lead-up.
Right.
Guy's mouth shut here. He uses wrestling to take him down to the ground and got pretty easily swept by the, you know, very long, lanky Mr. Struve and
Right. Got him out. That's pretty much some of it.
That was. Stefan Struve looks pretty good. He's still filling out. He's, what, 21 or something? 22?
I don't know.
He's extremely young, so he's got a long way to go. He can improving just with his pure size. You know, he gets, you know, more than halfway decent. You know, he's going to be a threat.
Right.
Corkle, he's entertaining to listen to, but I didn't see a lot. The sweep he got swept in wasn't exactly high level. He should have been able to defend it, but he couldn't. So it sucks to be him. Did we get another undercard fight?
Mark Bocek versus Dustin Hazlett. Lightweight fight.
Yeah. Mark Bocek looked good. Submission triangle or triangle choke.
Yep. Hazlett was trying to pull submissions from the bottom, but ultimately got choked out by triangle.
Yeah, and the path of Dustin Hazlett seems to be going down. He was close to a title shot at one point. And, he's lost his last couple fights. He needs to rethink and regroup, come back. Fun little fight. And then we had our main event. I've been looking
for main event.
The main event of the evening. Which we did actually get our second ever Buffer 360. I don't know if you caught it.
I did not catch that.
Yes. He introduced GSP. He did completely turn around a 360 with his little karate chop or whatever it is he does.
But then wouldn't he be facing GSP again?
Yes. That's why I say 360.
Okay.
Normally his move is to do a 180 to
point
at the next fighter, but he was already facing GSP. And he did the Brock Lesnar, mirror fight.
Yeah.
And he said he would never do it again, but he said it. I think he almost fell over when he did it with the Brock.
I was about to say, then he got dizzy, fell over, bumped his head on the cage, had to call in the paramedics.
Well, plus the first one, they didn't even show on, it wasn't shown on USC camera. You know, you go to like a YouTube home video to see it.
Yeah.
He did kind of stumble on it, but anyway, they caught most of it on camera here and it looked like it went fine. The story of this fight was jab and the inside leg kick from GSP for 5 rounds.
Right.
Takedowns, you know, which I think a lot of people thought going into this fight would be the deciding factor. Really wasn't.
There was very little in the way of takedown. Very little wrestling, period. It was mostly a kickboxing battle.
Very well
done. GSP actually broke Koscheck's right orbital in the first round, and Koscheck spent the next 4 rounds getting punched in the broken eye, which I'm sure felt great.
Sure. Koscheck had no answer for him on his feet.
No.
By the end of the second round, His lead leg was kicked enough that he didn't have any power under it, and he knew it. He knew he really couldn't. He didn't have the power to take someone down like GSP.
Right.
Other than the best offensive move Koscheck had the whole fight, he had a takedown that he managed to hold and control him for 10 seconds at the end of the round. He didn't even give him the round. He still lost the round because his eye got so badly battered.
Yes, he looked like Popeye. If only his corner had had some spinach.
True. The doc was trying to stop it like at least twice, and you know, maybe they should have. But you know, championship fights, they always seem to give the fighters a little more opportunity to fight than they do in another fight.
Right.
But his eye, by the fourth round, that eye was closed. It was like, really, you're gonna let him fight?
Yeah.
And the main criticism you give GSP is like, yeah, by the fourth round, why couldn't you finish him? He was half blind. GSP fought fairly conservatively and won the decision.
Yeah, but at least it was a different type of conservative fighting than his usual type of conservative fighting, which people, a lot of critics like to call it lay and pray, which I think is
for his style,
quite an overstatement, because he's always active on the top. But even so, with very little wrestling in this fight, he won it handily. by almost purely striking. So,
yeah, I mean, dude, that's your best criticism of him. You know, he's not finishing high level opponents. It's like,
yeah,
when you look at boxing, they almost always go to decisions, but when it's high level like that,
right?
MMA, you're going to start seeing a lot more of this too. So,
yeah,
you know, barring the freak knockout and freak submissions, you know, they're fighting for a championship for the reason they're the best in the world. It's hard to get them out,
right?
That being said, you know, maybe he could have swarmed on Koscheck a little bit, at least by the fifth round. You know, he was four rounds up.
Yeah.
And people still wonder, you know, maybe GSP still is a little gun shy to stay in the pocket and get, you know, knocked out like he did with Sarah. But
yeah,
as a championship fight goes, it was a brilliant strategy, executed perfectly. You know, if you're bitching, you're just bitching the bitch.
Yes.
You always gotta, people always got to tear you down, and when you look invincible, don't find anything to pick at you with, I guess.
So after this fight, the cries for GSP versus Anderson Silva seem to have started up again.
I about make sense at this point. I mean, what has GSP got left at 170 that you really want to see?
Not much. I mean, you can throw more people at him, but there's really no one who, well, what's his name?
Who is the next shot? I think they've already said.
Oh, yeah.
Jake Shields, yeah.
Jake Shields, yeah. But as I've said before, if Jake Shields looked like he did against Martin Kampmann, then he's already lost.
Yeah, maybe she'd go on that Dolce diet.
Yeah, maybe so.
You would have to cut whatever, 25 pounds of water the day before, like he did last time, apparently.
Hmm.
A good way to go into a fight, completely dehydrated and exhausted.
No.
But that's his next one, and after that, I don't see any reason why he couldn't be able to move up, fight whoever is champion at 185 at that time.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't know, I've said this before, but what I would personally like to see is a catchweight fight between Anderson and GSP with neither title on the line, just bragging rights. But
assuming Silva can cut past 185.
Yeah.
He says he can't. I mean, he did start his career at 170, so, and he says he can cut past 185. He's got one of those weird body types where he can cut as much weight as he wants.
Apparently. Yeah.
Because he apparently walked around 220, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see. I mean, and the thing is, you know, why does GSP need to prove himself at a higher weight? You know, or can he, you know, just stay champion at 170 as long as you can? You know, I guess it's up to if he wants to challenge himself or he's looking for a big payday. But
yeah, I guess
no reason he has to go up just because he cleared out a division. That just means he's a dominant champ.
Right.
We'll see. I say, well, you know, look at Jake Shields. I don't see what Jake can offer him. You know, slick sub maybe from the bottom.
Yeah, I mean, he's got great wrestling, but so does GSP. So and so did Koscheck.
I think GSP has a lot better wrestling than Jake Shields, and Jake Shields no slouch. Jake Shields, I think, may have better jiu-jitsu, but you know, applying your jiu-jitsu on GSP is pretty tough.
Right.
Definitely cannot. He's horrible. His stand-up is still pretty subpar for championship level. So, you know, Koscheck, you know, it's not as good as Koscheck, and Koscheck couldn't stand with him. I don't see how Jake Shields can.
Yeah. But we'll see.
You never know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of people from the Gracie camp out in Stockton, Nick Diaz is fighting the male cyborg, apparently.
Well, I'm glad he's not fighting the woman.
She might be a tougher challenge, actually.
Well, Strikeforce tries.
They have interesting booking, I've always said.
Yeah.
Not only that, we have they're looking to try to do a heavyweight tournament, Grand Prix, next year. Rumor names, 8-man, Fedor, Orlovsky, Verdum, Overeem, Bigfoot, Probably throw Brett Rogers in there at some point.
Yeah. I had not heard that. It's interesting.
Well, you got a lot of camps involved there that would have to agree on that, so that'd be really tough. Especially Fedor's camp. So.
Right.
So we'll see on that one. But it's an intriguing concept. I would like to see it, you know, over, you know, course of the first beginning of the year, doing a tournament.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Going on from Strikeforce News, go back to the WEC card.
The WEC card.
As all WEC cards, was great top to bottom. I'm really going to miss this organization just for... You know, cards were never boring.
Right. But, of course, we'll still get to see the same fights. They'll just be interspersed with the heavier weight classes of the UFC.
Yeah, so. But you're not going to get just a pure card of just action packs, you know. I mean, yeah. You could, you know, fights go the right way on the other weight classes, but you know, right. The rule 155 and below is always excellent.
The most exciting fights, right. And, you know, there is a perception among a lot of people that the heavyweights are the most exciting fighters.
Well, the easier chance of knockout, right?
Right.
You're not gonna, you don't see a whole lot of knockouts at 135 and 145. They're just not right. Big enough.
Right. And I think getting the little smaller guys in front of the bigger audience is going to possibly help change that perception some.
Yeah, and yeah, that's the thing. WEC was kind of a failure in terms of getting it, you know, to the level of UFC. You know, they pushed it a lot, but it was on a much weaker channel, and
right.
You know, a lot of people just didn't know it existed. I mean, it wasn't. Yeah,
and it didn't have the name recognition. I mean, the one big card, the one pay per view, they specifically eliminated the WEC branding so they could get the undercard on Spike. So that. Didn't really help the...
They essentially fooled people thinking it was a UFC. They just managed to avoid mentioning either name.
Right. Yeah, they had the UFC broadcast team. They had Dana White. They had Bruce Buffer. It was all UFC except, hey, why is the cage blue?
Hey, why is no one mentioned the name UFC?
Right.
Excuse me. Yeah, I said the casual fan probably, if they were aware of WEC, might have been like, oh, well, it's not UFC, so it's, you know... Must be one of those like little under group people.
Right.
You had to be somewhat of a well-informed fan to realize that no, it's UFC just under the different name and
right.
lower weight.
Smaller weight. Right.
They were still the best in the world. Other than the 155 class, they were the best in the world for their, you know, their weight class.
Right. So the first fight on the card...
Maybe the worst.
Bart Palaszewski versus Kamal Szelorus.
What is with all the Polish names lately? Just like it's like the last four or five cards is like some guy with like 5 billion consonants that ends in ski. I thought it was pretty much back and forth. I see giving it to Palaszewski or Szelorus, but Szelorus controlled the wrestling more.
Yeah, I gave all three rounds firmly to Szelorus myself.
I can't remember how I remember thinking it could have gone either way, but I thought with the wrestling and the way judges usually go, Szelorus probably had it, which he did. One judge did give it to Palaszewski, so.
Yes, that's true. Split decision.
It was a good fight, but by WEC standards, it was, you know, probably the most underwhelming fight on the card.
Right.
Do we see any, undercard fights on this, on the main broadcast?
No. Just, the four main card fights.
That's a little time. Well, they went over in the main event. Both fights went the distance, so.
Yeah. Three of the four fights went to decision, so there wasn't much time for a undercard to be slipped in.
It's funny, there were two five round fights.
So
yeah, and there were two undercard, four undercard fights ended in the first round, and one ended in 125, and one somebody won. Eddie Wineland beats Ken Stone apparently via slam at 211.
Oh wow!
I would guarantee you, had they had any time, they probably would have shown that fight.
Yeah,
because it's quick and you know it's an unusual KO. You know?
Right.
Shades of Rampage Arona.
Mm-hmm.
Our next fight up was Donald Cerrone versus Chris Hordecki. Incredibly fun fight.
Chris Hordecki, who still looks 12.
God, that boy. We've been looking at him for 4 years. He still looks about 12, 13.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, you like the light catches him right, and you realize he looks like a really old 12-year-old.
Beat up 12-year-old.
Yeah, he does. It's like, oh, wow, yeah, that guy isn't 12. But then again, you look at him again, it's like, oh, shit, he's like, he has like the worst baby face. And Donald Cerrone looked great here. It was a very fun fight. You know, choked him out. Cowboy choked out Hordecki.
Right. The first round was very close. I actually scored it for Hordecki. Takedowns. Basically, a little more control by Hordecki, although Cerrone might have won the stand-up. At least it was close.
He was winning on the feet, I thought. I had Cerrone edging out the first round, but it was very close. But it doesn't matter because Cerrone tapped him out on the second round. So,
right.
It was just very, very long. He might be like the second tallest 155er out there after, well, shit, I don't even know if he will ever fight again, but dude from Ultimate Fighter 5, Corey Hill.
Hmm.
Like after Corey Hill, he might be the tallest 155er because he looks like 6'3", 6'4"-ish. I know Corey Hill was 6'5", which was...
Right.
Means if you're 6'5", fighting 155, it means you have very thin bone structure, which...
He has hollow bones like a bird.
Oh, yeah, it didn't help. That's why he broke his leg. You were like,
yes.
About 2 years ago now, I think.
He's fought since then.
Has he? Okay.
Yeah, not in the UFC, but he has fought.
Yeah, he didn't break his leg in the UFC. It was somewhere else, but...
No, he broke it in the UFC.
Was it? It was like an undercard or something?
Yeah, it was an undercard bout.
I don't think they ever showed it on TV.
No, they specifically did not show that on TV. It was gruesome.
Okay, I've seen it on YouTube. It's up there with the famous Joe Theismann NFL leg-breaking. And from pro wrestling back in 2000, Sid Vicious jumping off the second rope. And similarly, snapping his leg at the middle of the calf.
Ooh.
Basically, his boot with the rest of his foot and leg hanging off to the side.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty gross. So, those are probably the three worst breaks I've ever seen. Of course, the Theismann one is the most famous. But anyways, Cerrone is not quite as tall, but he's a really tall, lanky 155er. And him standing next to Hordecki, who looks, again, 12, and being much shorter than him, it really looked like, you know, 12-year-old going in a fight against, like, a, you know, sophomore in college.
My Cerrone.
My Cerrone. Yeah, it's like...
Alternately, Rai Cerrone, the San Francisco tree. Hey!
Yeah, maybe not the oddest body matchup we've seen. Shrove and Nelson, probably still in the modern age, is probably still the funniest match, you know, physical right. matchup you'll see.
It's like the number 10.
And a 6'11", tall, skinny kid who also looks about like he's 12 versus the grizzly bear man he's pretty short for heavyweight. I think he's like 6 feet tall, which is short, a heavyweight. And next to a 6'11 guy, close to the giant belly and the beard.
Right.
Just a bizarre looking matchup. But it was a fun fight. I really liked it.
So moving on, Dominic Cruz versus Scott Jorgensen for the bantamweight championship.
Yes. Good fight.
It was very fast paced. They were moving fast.
They were. Jorgensen just not fast enough for
Cruz.
But a lot of people really hate. I don't get it very much, but something of he has a vibe about him apparently that people just do not like Mr. Cruz.
I don't recall seeing him in any interviews or anything, so at least nothing that stuck out as memorable to make me dislike him.
Me either, so I just kind of wonder where that came from, but it's just the way he carries himself. But he pretty much he controlled the fight.
Yeah, he won the stand-up, he won the takedowns, he took Jorgensen down, and he grounded and pounded. And that's pretty much it for five rounds.
Yeah, Jorgensen, I was still wondering about his skin condition. Last time I thought he'd been burned by something. It looks like, you know, I've known people that, you know, have been in like car wrecks and house fires that had similar, but they seem to be growing. So I'm guessing it's something similar to what Michael Jackson supposedly had.
Right. The splotchy,
vitiligo, like white person version of vitiligo.
Pigment.
Or India. I think Scott Jorgensen is Indian actually. So the Indians get it too. I don't know.
Kids get it too.
Yeah. But Cruz won. He got to hold two belts. He was simultaneously defended his bantamweight and then was awarded the first, or defended his WC bantamweight and was simultaneously awarded the UFC inaugural bantamweight belt.
Right.
He'll probably fight. He'll probably face Faber sooner than later.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. They may coach tough against each other. We still haven't heard. Who will be the coaches? Apparently, they're Chael and Silva is pretty much off because Chael can't. Don't worry about getting Chael licensed to coach because of a suspension.
And I like the idea of Faber versus Torres myself.
It's a good way to introduce the lighter classes to UFC.
Yes.
In terms of just awesomeness between two people, Vanderlei and Chael would probably top my list.
Yeah.
Brock officially turned it down. They're trying to get Brock and Mir. Brock entertained the idea, and now apparently has turned it down. So.
Oh, really?
That's a shame. Brock and Mir would be interesting.
It would be.
How irritated Brock would be to be away from his hermit lifestyle and have to be in Vegas and teach all these, you know, rotten kids.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it's too early in Brock's career for him to be coaching like that. But you know,
he'll say he's not really coach material. But neither was Rampage Jackson. They didn't do it twice, so.
Yeah, of course, brings in good assistant coaches, and that covers that. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean the coaches is more quotation just to you know, get them on TV and
right
kind of lead the camp. But you know, if they aren't really coaches by nature. Hopefully they bring in like all their guys who, you know, really can do the bulk of the technique and coaching stuff.
Right.
So, but enough of that. It's, you know, we'll see. Hopefully by after the holidays, Dana will make an announcement. I think he's waiting on something. But round to the main event, one of the best title fights you'll ever see in your life. WC is re-reigned, I think, 12 times at this point. And for good reason.
Ben Henderson versus Anthony Pettis.
It was a back and forth affair. It is everything you want in a title fight. Dead even going into the fifth round.
Yes.
Just back and forth. And guys on each other's backs. Punching, kicking, scrambling. Interesting fights for position. Just everything.
Yeah. In a fast pace.
Very, very fast pace.
Constant action. No. No. Resting, slowing down.
Right. And then fifth round said so going in, it was, and the fifth round was fairly close too, up until
the. It was. The kick heard around the world.
The ninja kick off the cage. If you did not see this, Google it, YouTube it. If for some reason you're listening to the show and you're not a fan of MMA, go find this kick.
Yes, it's one of the most amazing maneuvers I've ever seen in an MMA fight. at least visually striking and effective too.
Yeah, well, it wasn't just he threw it. I mean, if he'd just thrown the kick and it, you know, it missed, he'd be like, oh, well, that was kind of dumb.
Yeah.
Why would you ever think that would land? But it did land, and it knocked him down.
It did.
The only thing better would have been actually knocked him out with it. That would have, you know, probably definitely made it the move of the century. But
right. But I've watched it several times. He hopped off his left leg. His right leg bounced into the cage, and he bounced off the cage and used the momentum with his right leg to hit Ben Henderson in the head.
It was a ninja move, basically. It was something you see out of a video game, like, you know, Prince of Persia, where he runs along the walls and kicks somebody. It was that. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. It was
pretty much
a ridiculous move, and it worked.
That's the most amazing thing. You wouldn't think that something like that, I mean, it looks great, but what are the chances of it actually landing? And what are the chances that we'll ever see anything like that again from him or from anyone else?
People will be waiting for that kick, so probably not.
Right.
I think Ben Henderson, the entire time, everything going through his head while he was running up the cage or in the kicking, was like, there's no way this motherfucker's trying to kick me from running up the cage. But it'll be doubtful he can pull that off again. But I always said, you know, if someone ever manages to pull off a figure four leg lock in MMA, it'll never happen again, because then people will know what to look for. So.
And that that one kick sealed the fifth round, which basically sealed the fight.
Yep.
I gave rounds 1 and 4 to Henderson, rounds 2, 3, and 5 to Pettis.
How I had it scored.
One judge gave an additional round to Pettis, but
that's fine. They were close. There's some points.
Yeah. So. Yeah. But an amazing fight, and makes you wonder. The next step for Pettis now is to unify the WEC lightweight belt with the UFC lightweight belt against the winner of this next card, which is
right for January.
January 1st.
Yeah.
Frankie Edgar versus Gray Maynard.
Yep, a rematch. One undefeated fighter. One fighter only has one defeat against the challenger.
Right.
So on paper, it's a good story, but you know, so far they've had a hard time drumming up interest in the champ at 155, despite beating BJ Penn twice.
And
not a dynamic yeah. personality.
He's a very technical fighter, but not a very exciting fighter.
Yeah, he can be exciting, and you know, I said this is a story that, you know, given time, hopefully the countdown can kind of build this up. So
right,
you can drum up interest, but I guarantee you, the winner fighting Pettis will have a lot more interest just off that kick. Everyone will see the guy who did the ninja kick.
Right,
he's fighting for the championship, so right there, that's probably going to be a more entertaining. It's going to be a fight with more interest in it than the current one.
Right. So the question is, flashy moves are nice, but does he have the skill? Does he have the technique to beat either Edgar or Maynard? And
probably, maybe in a year, maybe in a couple of years. I don't think he's at that level today.
Yeah.
By default virtue of having this is the first belt they've actually combined, because the 185 and the 170 belts did not, and the 205 did not get combined when they moved up.
Right. And I'm glad they're doing it. I'm glad they're doing the unification. Just to
did you really want Rampage Jackson versus Brian Stan for the 205?
Well, no. But I'm glad they're doing this one anyway. Yeah. Just gives legitimacy to the champ. Doesn't, you know, Pettis.
Well, the 155er was the most, you know, out of all the belts they used to have in WC, it was the one that had the most legitimacy. Because I said the 205 was a joke, you know, it was like Rhino and Stan held it, you know, those two guys. Rhino, yeah. You know, didn't last one fight, and when he moved up, he had one fight in UFC and got cut.
Yeah.
Dan's already down to 185, and he's green as hell. 185. Actually, did have Chael Sonnen. You know, should have won the last 185 WC belt. But
yes, if Paulo Filho had not gone crazy and
failed to make weight, yes,
failed to make weight. So, Chael Sonnen was sort of the uncrowned champ of.
And a lot of people said at the time it was like, you know, it'd be ridiculous for him to get the shot against Silva because there's no way he'd stand a chance against him.
Right.
So in retrospect, it's like, yeah, that actually would have been a good fight, maybe.
Yeah.
I can't remember who was it. Condit was the last 170 champion.
Wasn't Filho the last 170 champion?
That's 185. 170.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry.
I think it was Condit.
Yeah.
Condit's had a good career so far in UFC. So
yeah.
He moved up and he's working his way up the ladder. But again, he wouldn't have, you know, GSP, Matt Hughes, any of those guys. Yeah, Condit was not ready for GSP. That was for damn sure. That would have been a ridiculous fight. So, at least Pettis, you know, seems like he would be somewhat competitive against the 155ers.
Right. And plus, there's not really anyone after Maynard who is really standing out as the next title contender at the UFC for 155.
Jim Miller seemed to think differently.
Well, Jim Miller is welcome to think differently.
Still a pretty stacked division, so you know we'll see.
Yeah, it is, and bringing in the talent from WEC will only help that.
See, we got, you know, Korean Zombie on the UFC card. Hopefully, finally win a fight.
Yeah, if he can finally win a fight, I'm afraid he's going to get cut before he ever wins a fight because his
head.
I mean, he's fun to watch fight, but he.
I think you know the UFC's not holding the lot. I think most of them thought he won the Garcia fight.
Yeah,
Garcia in fact had two fights in a row where everyone thought he lost, but he got the decision. So,
right.
So they didn't hold it against. What's his name? Garcia just fought, lost the won the horrific. We talked about it on the last show.
Nam Phan,
yes. Yeah, the first ever 145 fight in the UFC, live UFC.
Right.
Nothing against Garcia. It's not his fault. You know, he doesn't make the judging. But he has won two fights in a row that everyone thought he lost, which is just... He apparently has a style the judges like.
Right.
So, anyway, I think that's going to do it for us to today on Outside the Cage. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Do you have anything else to add, Adam? Alan? It doesn't seem like I've done this already.
I don't know, but if I see Adam, I will ask him.
I don't even know an Adam. I don't know where that name's coming from. I think my tongue just keeps slipping. I had a friend named Adam, at least it would make sense, but you know, last friend I had named Adam I haven't talked to in person in 10 years, so.
All right. Maybe you should call him up.
I should.
I have nothing else to add.
All right, that'll do it for us. We'll see you next time, Outside the Cage.
You've been listening to Outside the Cage with your hosts, Gabriel Owens and Alan Young. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Outside the Cage is a Radio Free Cybertron production. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.